Please be seated. I'm pretty sure my fascination with Lazarus began in college. Sure, I knew the story, and as most kids who grow up memorizing Bible verses, I longed for the ever desirable shortest verse in the Bible, verse 35 of John 11, Jesus wept. But this story wasn't a favorite of mine as a kid, the way it became a favorite over the years. I suspect that my interest in Lazarus in the early 90s was linked to the book, The Last Temptation of Christ. Although the book was several decades old at that point, Martin Scorsese's film version came out in 1988 and was, of course, controversial. Being a woman of the book, though, I don't actually remember seeing the movie until much later. But I do remember reading the book, which was so prominently displayed in bookstores at that time. And in particular, I remember Lazarus. Lazarus, although he was raised from death, still smelled like the grave and lingered at the table in his strips of cloth, gruesomely depicted with Mary and Martha removing worms from his skin. Lazarus, who, having been dead, was never really the same again. Since reading that book, I became a collector of Lazarus references in literature and music and film, television and poetry. I sought Lazarus out and I stumbled across him. He would appear in poetry. His name would title an episode in season 3 of Doctor Who. And there are lists online galore of the many depictions of Lazarus in film. Lazarus, a one-hit wonder in biblical terms, is now a cultural icon. Being a disorganized collector of these kinds of Lazarus references, you can imagine my surprise earlier this summer when I came across Rick Moody's essay, Notes on Lazarus, in the Best American Essays of 2018. Moody had me at the first sentence. What do we know about Lazarus of Bethany, he asks. And then he goes on to ask many of the questions that we have about Lazarus. For instance, why is it that Jesus feels such waves of grief at Lazarus's death when he knows already that resurrecting Lazarus is possible? And what did Lazarus feel? And what does Lazarus tell us about death in the end? And if he could talk to us now in our tongue, what would he say? Memorably, Moody also has several declarations in his essay. Lazarus is a revival tent miracle, in Moody's words. And he further exclaims, oh, to have been a bystander. Yes, a bystander indeed. Who we want to be in this story may tell us a great deal about our spiritual understanding of it. The first information we as readers get at the beginning of John 11 is the biographical snapshot of Lazarus of Bethany. This mention of him is the first in the gospel, and he is identified not by himself, but as the brother of Mary and Martha, who are also mentioned here by name for the first time in this gospel. We learn that Jesus will not go to Lazarus right away, that something bigger is at play in this situation, something which will lead to God's glory. And as if to reassure us, the story confirms that Jesus loved Martha and her sister and Lazarus. But if we are honest, it still feels a little odd, this delay, this use of Lazarus's sickness unto death to glorify God. It may be necessary, but it is not comfortable. 2 days later, when Jesus arrives to find Lazarus has already died and been buried for 4 days, The grief of Mary and Martha is palpable. Friends have come from nearby Jerusalem to support the sisters. And Jesus and Martha begin by having a very interesting and yet seemingly ill-timed theological conversation about resurrection. It is the core explanation of why Jesus did not come right away. Martha returns to their home, and Mary comes to him with the same heartfelt plea. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. And the scene shifts here from the theological to the emotional, and in so doing, it pulls us away a bit from that theological discomfort. But the emotional is uncomfortable as well. The weeping, the grief, the disappointment from Martha and Mary, the doubt among those in the crowd. It is all building to a crescendo of emotions at the stone in front of Lazarus's grave. The story then becomes very practical. The smell of the body decomposing is mentioned for fear of allowing more of the stench out of the tomb. Presumably, this scene unfolds with Jesus outside the tomb and Lazarus inside. When Jesus calls loudly to him, "Lazarus, come out." And when Lazarus appears, he is still bound in strips of cloth, his hands, his feet, his face. And then a final word from Jesus, "Unbind him. Let him go." I don't know how you feel about this ending, but I find it anticlimactic. We are left with so many questions, not the least of which is, how did Mary and Martha react? Did they embrace him, throw themselves on him, arms wrapped around his neck? Do they kiss his revealed face? Soothe him with their words, with ointments and touch? We know the crowds were amazed, but what did Lazarus look like, feel like? How did he walk? What did he say? Was he like that thankful leper who rushed toward Jesus? Or was he like a zombie, alive but with flesh eaten away like he just stumbled out of the video thriller? These answers are all left to our imagination. And what imaginations we have about Lazarus. As Moody shares in his examples, everyone from artists like Caravaggio and Rembrandt, musicians from David Bowie to Nick Cave, poets like Rilke and Wright, Sexton and Clifton, just to name a few, have imagined this scene. But maybe Lazarus fascinates us precisely because the answer is not spelled out. It's so full of allegorical imagery of Jesus' own death and resurrection that it's easy to lose Lazarus in his own resurrection. Images of the stone before Jesus' own tomb come to our mind. Strips of cloth that still bind Lazarus are unwrapped from Jesus and folded and left on the head of the bench where his body had been. Stories are so similar and yet so different. Moody mentions in his essay a sermon that he heard about Lazarus where the preacher felt compelled to break this news to his congregation. He's quoting this pastor. "Unfortunately, I must disappoint those of you who, because of this story, are hoping for a resurrection of your own relatives." Thought that to be a rather odd declaration, frankly, and I suppose that's my role today. But I spent some time really thinking about that idea this week. Is that even remotely what this story provides? Does Lazarus get our hopes up? Should he? What's going on here seems more ambiguous. We don't see any joy in this scene. The emotions are all before Lazarus is raised. And even in its happy ending, the story leaves us heavy and unsettled and unsure of why Lazarus and what his life was like afterward. Not biblically, but traditionally, there seems to be plenty of thought that Lazarus obviously didn't live forever, nor did he, like Jesus after him or Elijah before him, get swept up into heaven. He had to go through that dying again at some point, which understandably also makes us uncomfortable. But if Lazarus is not just allegorical in relation to Jesus' own resurrection and not particularly cheerful, does his story provide us with hope of some kind? I had started off thinking earlier this week that maybe Lazarus's story is about transformation, about who we become and who we can become when we respond to being called forth. That would have been an easy way to go, I think, in retrospect. But the more I read this story, the more I read people's interpretations of the unanswered parts of the story, the more questions I had. It occurred to me that part of what I like about Lazarus's resurrection story spiritually is how messy it is. We are left to our imaginations to figure out how he was unbound, what he looked like after he was unbound, what he smelled like, what he did, how he acted. And he is just so human. Lazarus's humanity is front and center in this story. And we know, don't we, that Lazarus is a lot like us. We know that resurrection in the metaphorical sense of the word doesn't just happen in three words and we burst our way back into the light. This story leaves us to figure out the hardest part. The hard part being that we have to be unbound. Being unbound when we lose our struggle with addiction again and have to seek help and forgiveness from our loved ones is hard. Being unbound when depression overtakes us is hard. Being unbound when relationships fall apart is hard. Being unbound when our fears about our kids are suddenly founded is hard. Being unbound when we have outlived so many of our loved ones and loneliness creeps up upon us is hard. Being unbound when the diagnosis keeps our bodies distant from us is hard. Being unbound when the treatment feels worse than the disease is hard. Being unbound when the politics of our world seem so cruel and divisive that we don't know where to turn is hard. We know this human messiness of being unbound, and it doesn't just happen with a few steps over a threshold. And if we are honest, we might even confess that sometimes that messiness keeps us from even trying. Because this we also know. When Lazarus is unbound, he is someone different than who he was before he went into the tomb. In the tomb, as he is feeling his way towards Jesus' voice, he is healing, recovering, grieving. And all of those are a patient process, and they are messy processes, and they are human processes. Unbinding takes perseverance and hope, and it takes staying in Lazarus's shoes, so to speak. Because what is compelling about the Lazarus story is the hope that we will walk out of the tomb in all of our messy human glory. What Lazarus teaches us is that resurrection is human. It is about bad smells and darkness and change and joy and hope. Lazarus's story is not just about joy. His story is about a hope that is messy, sad, and joyful all at once. The psychologist Joan Bolker, who I think I've mentioned before to you, reminds us that every major life change destroys the equilibrium of our lives and our self-image, and leaves behind a portion of the old self. And most of us, on some level, are conservatives. Even if the new self is better, we feel some sadness at leaving the old one. Lazarus embodies this destruction of our equilibrium that Bolker is naming. He gives us room to grieve our resurrections. Lazarus gives us permission to walk slowly. But we should remember, he does come out. He twists to the light, to the sound of Jesus' voice. He stumbles forward. And our hope to be unbound is with Lazarus. We are not bystanders at his tomb. We are him. And like him, we are reminded today what it means to be fully human and loved, no matter how much we change.